The State Public Service Commission says Northwestern Energy owes some money to its ratepayers. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Flathead reporter Katrin Fry looks at what attracts new businesses to Montana, and it's not all about money. And in our ongoing Climate Week series, Capital reporter Dan Boyce hikes into the high country to learn more about the impact of climate change on high alpine mammals. The State Public Service Commission has ordered Northwestern Energy to refund an estimated $2 million to $3 million to customers after the panel found the utility overestimated how much revenue it lost from energy conservation programs. Commissioner Travis Cavula says the 5-0 decision focuses on reported revenue lost from 2006 through 2011.
I mean, one of the things that Northwestern is saying is that it should receive energy savings credit for light bulbs that are in storage, the 8.6% of CFLs that people have never actually plugged into a socket. So I think it's unreasonable for consumers to be having to be put on the line for energy savings of devices that simply are not saving energy in the here and now.
The commission order requires Northwestern to refile its statements on how much revenue it lost using a formula approved by the PSC. Once a final amount is approved, Cavula says rates will be adjusted accordingly and credits given over a period of no more than a year. Northwestern Energy spokesman Butch Larcom says the company will likely appeal the decision.
Well, we just feel that the charges that were justified in our energy efficiency programs, we just find good value in energy efficiency. It's a lot cheaper for us to promote people saving energy than it is to generate energy. And, you know, we just hate to see anything that, you know, impinges on that approach.
Commissioner Cavula says the decision is not intended to discourage energy conservation programs.
Yeah, I think it's clear based on the evidence that have been presented in a lot of PSC proceedings that these programs over the long haul have saved consumers a lot of money.
The commission also told Northwestern it could not recoup from ratepayers about $1.4 million in costs related to a 2012 emergency shutdown of a 150-megawatt natural gas-fired generating station near Anaconda.
And in other news from around the state, the trial of a Colorado man charged with killing Eastern Montana teacher Sherry Arnold has been moved out of her hometown. Attorneys for defendant Michael Keith Spell of Parachute, Colorado, argued he could not receive a fair trial in Sydney because of the heavy news coverage surrounding the case. They wanted it moved to Bozeman, more than 400 miles away. Today, District Judge Richard Simonton instead moved the January 6th trial to Glendive. That's about 50 miles away. Authorities say Spell grabbed Arnold from a Sydney street in January 2012 and choked her or held her face in a puddle until she was dead. Prosecutors intend to seek the death penalty. Spell's co-defendant pleaded guilty in August under a deal that calls for him to receive 100 years in prison.
A 67-year-old Kalispell woman has died of injuries suffered when her car and a pickup collided at a U.S. Highway 2 intersection in front of an Evergreen grocery store. The Montana Highway Patrol says the woman's car was making a turn on a yellow light as a pickup was traveling through the intersection. The pickup hit the side of the car just before 12:30 p.m. yesterday. The woman was pronounced dead on arrival at Kalispell Regional Medical Center. Flathead County Sheriff Chuck Curry says the victim's name is Janice Dow. The driver of the pickup wasn't injured.
A Butte man has denied charges that he killed his infant daughter. The Montana Standard reports 32-year-old Matthew John Blaz pleaded not guilty in district court today to deliberate homicide for the August 16th death of 8-week-old Madison Jolene Blaz. An autopsy determined she died of abusive head trauma. Blaz was arrested on September 26th.
A state senator and Blackfeet leader has pleaded guilty in tribal court to charges similar to those he faces in federal court. Blackfeet court documents obtained by the Associated Press today show Shannon Ogier was both charged and pleaded guilty on Wednesday to threatening a public official, DUI, and reckless driving. Chief Judge Ali Edwards' order gives Ogier a 37-day suspended jail sentence. Most of a $1,150 fine also was suspended. Ogier was accused of fleeing a Glacier County Sheriff's deputy during a May traffic stop. The surprise guilty plea in tribal court comes after federal prosecutors filed similar misdemeanor charges against Ogier and prompted a legal battle over jurisdiction. U.S. Attorney spokeswoman Victoria Francis declined to comment on what effect the tribal proceedings may have on the federal case.
A 25-year-old Crow Agency man has been sentenced to nearly 34 years in prison for a drunken driving crash on the Crow Indian Reservation that killed four people. The U.S. Attorney's Office says U.S. District Judge Sam Haddon sentenced Bruce Wayne Eagleman Jr. today in Helena. Prosecutors say Eagleman's blood alcohol level was over three times the legal limit when the sport utility vehicle he was driving collided with another vehicle east of Hardin in December 2011. The crash killed his passenger, 27-year-old Vincent Fighter Davis, and three people in the other car, 41-year-old Marva Noses-Gunn of Hardin, her 17-year-old son Frankie, and 19-year-old Cormont Jefferson Firebearer of Crow Agency. Eagleman suffered minor injuries. Court records say he also tested positive for opiates and marijuana use.
The executive director of the Montana Public Employees Retirement Administration has been placed on paid administrative leave. Roxanne Minahan has overseen the state agency that manages eight retirement systems for 7 years. Yesterday, she was placed on leave following a meeting with Scott Moore, the president of the board that oversees the administration. Moore said in a statement today that the meeting was, precipitated by concerns brought to the board president by staff and board members concerning multiple issues, end quote. Administration Chief Legal Counsel Melanie Simmons declined to detail those issues, saying only they were work-related and not criminal. Scott says in his statement, Minahan will not be involved at the workplace until the board meets in executive session on Monday.
The conversation about economic development in Northwest Montana is growing beyond talk of tax structure and infrastructure to include Glacier Park, Flathead Lake, skiing, hiking, and fishing. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on the link between business investment and location, location, location.
Dr. A. Craig Eddy works as the chief medical officer at Kalispell Regional Medical Center. Recruiting doctors is among his responsibilities.
This is a really good place to recruit to.
Eddie says that's not because of the salary.
One of the first talks I have with every physician who comes through on a recruiting tour is I tell them that you will not get rich here.
Eddie says salaries tend to be in the mid-range for any given specialty.
You're never going to become a multimillionaire working in healthcare in Kalispell. However, you will have a great lifestyle. Your kids will all go to school, be able to go to college. You'll be able to afford to send your kids to college. And you will have a reasonable income.
Eddie says the three things important to recruiting include the quality of the facilities, the caliber of the colleagues, and location. National Parks Conservation Association Program Manager Michael Jamieson says the importance of location is something they're hearing repeatedly.
We asked all the Chamber of Commerce members all throughout the crown of the continent, from Missoula up to Banff, east side and west side. We asked them why they choose to do business here. And we expected to get quite a bit of mention about tax structures and market shares and transportation hubs. But instead, what we got was an earful about hunting and fishing and hiking.
Jamieson says business investment comes to the area for the same reason tourists do.
Some towns are attractive because they have ports nearby, or because they have great rail service, or because they have large urban centers with lots of high culture. Our communities happen to be attractive because they're small and authentic and genuine, and they're close to some absolutely world-class outdoor recreation opportunities.
This conversation about economic development was highlighted at a recent forum bringing together entrepreneurs and economic development professionals from across the area and beyond.
I think it really is the launch pad for a whole new conversation about how maybe we will do community development in the Crown of the Continent region.
Jamieson says the National Parks Conservation Association's mission is to protect and enhance national parks for future generations. It's involved in this because parks are huge economic drivers. He says this recent forum is part of a bigger conversation about the economy of the New West.
Part of what makes us who we are is our heritage of timber and mining and ag and other traditional industries. That's the heritage that we own. And that's the heritage we don't want to lose. But at the same time, we need to diversify our economy, put our eggs in many, many, many more baskets.
Jamieson says the question is how to expand and diversify the economy while maintaining that heritage. Many economic development ventures focus on making the area more accessible, either through infrastructure improvements like high-speed internet, more and cheaper air travel, and making the area attractive for investment through the tax structure. The conservation element of this asks to also factor in open space, public land, and clean air and water as also important to bringing people and investment into the local economy. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
The Montana Air National Guard is delivering its final F-15 fighter planes to a base in California this week. The Great Falls Tribune reports three of the jets left Great Falls yesterday and the final three were to be transferred to the base in Fresno today. The planes had been scheduled to leave in early October, but the government shutdown delayed the departures. The 120th Fighter Wing is now converting to its new mission. Pilots have begun training to fly the C-130 cargo planes that are scheduled to arrive next spring.
A health conference, one billed as first of its kind, held in a rural, non-coastal part of the country, is underway this week at the University of Montana. The Gender Expansion Conference focuses on the unique healthcare needs of the transgendered. The event is drawing over 100 participants from across the country, including medical and mental health care professionals, transgendered individuals, their parents, and advocates. The conference is sponsored by Missoula's Blue Mountain Clinic with assistance from the Pride Foundation and the Gender Expansion Project. Blue Mountain Clinic's Lindsay Burke says the conference is designed to provide training on more advanced topics centered around transgender health care.
Such as younger folks, teens before they hit puberty, to block puberty from happening and allow them to transition into the gender expression identity and even potentially biological sex that they wish to be, that they feel that they are. And also older folks. There's less information on elderly people and how transitioning can affect their bodies. And also post-operative care. How do you take care of someone after they've had a gender reassignment surgery? The knowledge just is not here in Montana. So by bringing in doctors who are at the top of their field nationwide here to Montana to train our local docs on these concepts, will later on provide more access to folks living in Great Falls.
We'll have more on the Gender Expansion Conference and the common challenges the transgendered face next week on Montana Evening Edition. The impact of climate change on Montana wildlife is the focus of our Climate Week feature tonight. The small rabbit-like pika is absolutely adorable, with petite rounded ears and short legs holding up a plump little body with no tail. It has become a sort of poster child for climate change in the West. Evidence shows our warming temperatures are having a pronounced impact on animals like the pika, which live in high alpine environments. As Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us, those environments are shrinking, and the animals up there are having to adapt or die.
So I think we want to pull out right over here by the sign that says half mile to the U.S. Customs border.
The northeastern corner of Glacier National Park seems almost entirely deserted this time of year.
And we're just going to, we'll walk the road just a little tiny bit.
The sun slowly breaks over the plains, casting the serrated ridgelines ahead under a sort of frosted purple alpine glow.
From Canada.
At its core, this is a story about a line and what it represents. A line we see all the time when we look at high mountains.
You can really see a pretty defined tree line where it goes from trees to just basically rocks and shrubs and that sort of thing.
Jake Bermonti is hiking above that line today.
Originally, I was an IT guy, so my life started looking kind of like a Dilbert comic strip.
A couple years ago, he quit his job, sold his house, started a video production company in Kalispell, and he was looking for something to focus on.
I ended up coming across the fact that nobody had hiked all 734 miles of trail in Glacier Park.
Or at least not in one season.
Not very often you come across a project like that that actually seems quasi-achievable.
In 2011, Jake Bermonti did that. Between mid-May and mid-October, he hiked every mile of trail in Glacier. He's passionate about this place, and he knows it really well. He has the perfect idea of where we need to go.
Yeah, we're hoping to find some pikas on the other side of Gable Pass.
We start low, where copper and yellow leaves are still clinging to bushes spaced among the pines.
It's pretty much just a lodgepole forest.
He has this camera bag clipped to his waist that actually slides out of a special compartment in his backpack. He turns on his heels, lifting his long lens to snap pictures of birds, trying to call them in. We hike up and up for miles. The trees grow shorter and start to thin out.
and it's just starting to break into the subalpine. So now this is my favorite part.
We've come to Lee Ridge, a rocky plateau encircled by some of Glacier's tallest peaks, like we're in the jaws of some great old steel leg trap. This is the kind of place where high alpine mammals live, like wolverines, mountain goats, and pika. But Bramante points across the valley to the far tree line and explains the problem. Warmer temperatures are making the conditions up here less harsh, and so the tree line is climbing up the mountains.
So it starts to take away some of that habitat from them, where they have, you know, these exposed cliffs and that sort of thing. And so some of that stuff is gradually disappearing.
Good girl, Zoom.
University of Montana wildlife biology professor Joel Berger is playing with his dog Zuma on a very different trail, a wide, well-maintained footpath in the Rattlesnake, just north of Missoula. It's not meanwhile or anything, totally different day. Dr. Berger studies mammals, which live in harsh climates, like alpine zones.
Some of these high-elevation species that are dependent on cold, they may have some problems here in the northern Rockies.
A big part of his work focuses on mountain goats and Glacier. Working with the National Park Service and a graduate student, he says he's too early in this research to say if goat populations are stable or going up or going down in Glacier. But he says as he and his colleagues watch other populations of alpine animals drop, there is evidence that climate change is a factor, although that information is still in its infancy.
Just as we can't say, oh, Sandy or Katrina were caused because of climate change per se, because you can't take one event. We can't just take one population, we'll say mountain goats, or one population of mountain goats, or one population of pikas, and conclude that climate has been a driver. But if we can mobilize greater amounts of evidence across spatial scales and time, we have a much stronger case to be made.
Still, he says pika and mountain goats used to be seen much farther south. Pika as far south as Las Vegas, native mountain goats in Utah. Berger says climate change is far from the only thing affecting these animals. He says human encroachment and lack of conservation is often far easier to peg as a reason for population decline. But if, as evidence strongly suggests, temperatures keep rising in Montana, as that happens, Berger says these high alpine mammals will be some of the first to feel the pinch. Wolverines use mountain snowpack to dig dens and raise their young. Mountain goats use the open cliffs as a way to escape predators. Pika are very sensitive to heat. The National Park Service says they can die if exposed to temperatures above 78 degrees in just a few hours if they don't find shelter.
Species at the edge tend to blip off.
They're not something that can go ahead and say, well, I'm just going to go ahead and fly over, you know, I'm going to fly further north. I mean, pikas, at least in Montana, you know, it's kind of like bears in California, right? You know, I mean, there are no grizzly bears in California anymore.
Jake Bramante and I have gotten into some snow. We're trudging through unexpected drifts on our way to Gable Pass, following a lone set of wolf tracks. The wolf didn't seem to have trouble staying on top of the snow. Jake is taking us here because when he did this hike for his project, he found this enormous pika village.
I call them eepers because that's the kind of sound that they make. It sounds like a little squeeze toy or something like that.
Like, what's it sound like?
Do you want me to make the noise?
Absolutely.
All right. Eee! That's basically what they sound like. And hopefully we can actually hear one for real. And then we can kind of A-B it and see which one is more accurate.
Can we hear your version again?
No, we're good.
He actually is pretty close.
Oxen gather their food and just cheep at you, which is pretty fun.
This is sound from his video blog from his first trip to the pika village. Bramante says he really loves pikas. They're one of his favorite animals.
And so anytime I get to see him, it's always a special thing. And they're just cute. And I just love how hardy they are.
Hardy in the right climate, anyway. He thinks it would be a tragedy to lose them.
It would really suck to know, like, yeah, when I was a kid, I used to hike out here and see pikas, and now I don't. And so that, you know, sucks for, you know, my kids or whatever. So
climate change might not actually be all bad for these species. UM wildlife biologist Joel Berger says in the short term, receding glaciers may actually provide more of the types of food preferred by animals like mountain goats. Pika may find ways to change their habits, find places to hide in the heat of the day, forage more at night or early morning.
Well, it's not all doom and gloom. The fact that pikas show some behavioral flexibility is a good thing. A second possible reason for optimism, and I'm not very optimistic because the loss of all the high elevation water regimes that we see here, of course it's a problem. It's a problem not just for animals, but for people who rely on water pack. But if you go to the north end of a species range, such as Alaska for mountain goats, what we see is as glacial retreat occurs there also, habitats are opening. And so at this end, the southern end of goat distribution in the U.S. in and around the northern Rockies, it may not be so good for goats. At the north end, where we're opening up habitats, could actually be better. It's just that most of the people who enjoy seeing wildlife, where our higher population densities are, aren't going to see it as much as perhaps people in these remote landscapes.
We reach the Pika Village near Gable Pass, a field of large limestone boulders. At first, nothing. No eeps. No pika. The snow's pretty deep. Jake Bramante thinks they're probably hiding out. But then...
Well, yeah, I was kind of sitting up on a rock, and you were glancing over, and lo and behold, we had a little pika scurry out.
The little gray critter bounded between rocks with ease, and then disappeared. We gathered our things and headed back down the trail, back down below the tree line. I'm Dan Boyce, reporting in Glacier National Park.
Tomorrow, in the last of our Climate Week features, reporter Edward O'Brien visits with some Montana farmers impacted by climate change.
Now for tonight's forecast. West of the night divide tonight, expect clear skies and patchy freezing fog with lows in the mid-20s to lower 30s. Tomorrow should be mostly sunny with patchy freezing fog and highs in the 50s. Central Montana tonight, expect mostly clear skies and lows 35 to 40 degrees. Tomorrow should be sunny with highs 55 to 60 degrees. Southwest Montana tonight, expect clear skies and lows 30 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow should be sunny with highs 55 to 60 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Evan Barrett.
Reflects on the recent federal government shutdown and Congress's near default on the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, a whole lot stinks. Buried in that stinking pile of refuse is a small item that reminds us of a big problem, the pervasive power that special interests have through their lobbyists and the benefits they gain from the revolving door between congressional members and staff and those same special interests. The small item with the small smell, is the medical device tax. Did you ever wonder why that small thing rose to the surface? Why is it possible that repeal of the tax became a major central issue that could have led to the dangerous government default? Among all things in the Affordable Care Act that could have been brought forward in this debate, as wrong-headed as it was, why did this seemingly small issue become a big issue? Let's look at the facts before we examine the stink. When the ACA passed, pay-as-you-go procedures, a good thing, covered the subsidies that help provide affordable, quality health care insurance for almost all Americans. This coverage, which included up to 27 million of our fellow citizens who now can do nothing but go to the emergency room for care or go bankrupt if something as truly bad happens to them, was paid for through a series of taxes on those industries in the private sector who were going to gain financially in a big way from the ACA through the expansion of medical activity and the tens of millions of new medical customers. Among those taxes was a small 2.3% tax on medical devices used in the United States, whether they were manufactured here or imported from overseas. The tax does not apply to any medical device that the public generally buys at retail for individual use or on the sales of medical devices for export. And the companies were obligated to pay the tax, not the consumer. This industry has sales of way over $100 billion a year and could easily absorb the cost of this $3 billion a year tax from their profits, profits which will only go up under the ACA. This tax, like almost all other taxes involved, was agreed to by industry when the ACA passed. They were licking their chops at the new customer base. Only later did they decide to accept the new customers, but try to gut the small tax that they had agreed to absorb. Talk about wanting to have your cake and eat it too. What do these large medical device manufacturers have that you do not? A lobbying corps in Washington. All told, the medical supplier industry has spent over $150 million lobbying Congress since 2008. Their effort now is to increase their profits by $30 billion over the next 10 years through the elimination of this small tax that helps little people. And we have not even gotten into the amount they have invested in helping get compliant members of Congress elected. Why did this medical device tax repeal become a cause célèbre in the recent dangerous congressional debate? Why did it rise above all other seemingly more important items? Well, lobbying for the industry is none other than former Senator Evan Bayh of Indiana. Bayh has the special congressional access that only former senators get. He is part of the revolving door problem that benefits special interests and leaves the rest of us sucking air. And I would note, the revolving door is not a partisan issue. Bayh is a former Democratic senator. Through the revolving door go members of Congress of both parties and their staffs to serve the interests of the medical industrial complex, the military industrial complex, the corrections industrial complex, and so on. Large paychecks feed those going in and out of the revolving door. Whichever side of the door they're on, those with money and power get their special privileges, using their resources to oil the hinges of the revolving door to their benefit and the benefit of their clients. Again, leaving the rest of us out in the cold. That little stink wafting from the medical device tax part of the recent debate is part of a much larger stink of money, lobbyists, and campaign donations. This kind of money, this kind of effort, is part of a new era of corruption that is only getting worse because of the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, which equates money to free speech. And under that premise, the bigger you are, the richer you are, the more free speech you have, and the more influence on our democratic processes you have. Regular citizens can only wonder how their voices can be heard over the din of untold money flowing into the process and the stink of the revolving door as part of that. This is Evan Barrett in Butte, worrying about getting our democracy to work for average citizens.
Evan Barrett is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.